We are taking you on a journey today into just a really fascinating piece of professional literature.
Yeah, it's a great one.
Our source material is an excerpt from a publication called the True North EHS, and it's issue number 10, written by Brian Barker.
Right. And for those who might not be familiar with that acronym, EHS stands for Environmental Health and Safety.
Exactly. It's this highly specialized field dedicated to keeping workers safe, preventing accidents, and, making sure that these really complex industrial environments don't cause catastrophic harm.
Which is obviously incredibly important work.
Oh, absolutely. But the mission of our deep dive today, it goes far beyond like industrial safety protocols or factory floor guidelines.
Right, it's way bigger than that.
Yeah. What Barker is actually diagnosing in this excerpt is this universal danger that applies to every single one of us, no matter what field you work in.
Oh, totally.
He's writing about the incredibly dangerous habit we all have of outgrowing our foundations and the price we pay when we assume we're just, too advanced to worry about the basics.
It's such a common trap. I mean, everywhere.
It really is. And to understand the gravity of this trap, I want you to just imagine being an elite athlete. You're this 18 or 19-year-old basketball prodigy, and you've been recruited by one of the most prestigious college programs in the entire
Yeah,
country.
at the absolute top of your game.
Exactly. So you walk into the locker room on day one, and you fully expect to, analyze tape, run complex offensive schemes, and talk high-level strategy with the coaching staff.
Which makes sense. You're a prodigy.
Right. But instead, the coach sits you down, looks you right in the eye, and spends the entire first practice teaching you how to put on your socks and lace up your shoes.
And the crazy part is, that is not a hypothetical scenario.
Wait, really?
Yeah, no, the coach in that story is John Wooden.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, arguably one of the greatest, most successful basketball coaches in the history of the sport. He would sit there with these highly recruited future NBA stars and make sure they knew how to carefully smooth out every single wrinkle in the fabric over their toes.
Is blowing their minds, probably.
Exactly. Before they ever even touched a basketball, he was drilling the absolute ground floor of their craft into their heads, and he just refused to let them advance until that foundational step was completely perfected.
That is wild. But I guess it makes perfect sense when you think about it.
It really does. And Barker uses that exact mindset to lay out a premise that is just as true in a corporate boardroom or, a tech startup as it is on a construction site.
Which is that when the basics are weak, the bigger problems inevitably show up later.
Precisely. So in this deep dive, we're going to explore why we constantly fall into the trap of wanting to do the quote-unquote advanced work and the massive chasm between how a standard looks on paper versus how it actually survives in reality.
And how to build a foundation that actually holds up under extreme pressure.
Right, exactly.
Okay, let's unpack this because Barker makes a really pointed observation early in the excerpt regarding how modern professionals evaluate their own worth.
Yeah, he really doesn't hold back there.
He doesn't. He points out that people have this relentless urge to jump straight to the bigger conversations. They want to lead meetings about organizational culture.
Right, all the big buzzwords.
Yeah, exactly. They want to talk about visionary leadership, high-level strategy, holistic engagement. They just gravitate toward those executive suite buzzwords that sound incredibly impressive in a quarterly review.
And they look great on a resume, too.
Oh, for sure. And Barker points out this phenomenon that exists in nearly every modern industry. We've somehow created this ecosystem where professionals are deemed highly effective, not because they deeply understand the actual granular work being done by their teams.
Right, the actual day-to-day stuff.
Yeah, but because they possess the most robust vocabulary of management buzzwords, or, because they've mastered the art of building just an aesthetically flawless slide deck.
It's so true. And the incentive structures in modern organizations, they practically demand this behavior.
Oh, absolutely, they do.
I mean, Barker argues that companies are constantly demanding what he calls advanced results. They want a world-class safety culture. They want superior risk recognition across all departments and flawless execution of complex strategies.
But they're demanding the penthouse suite when they haven't even poured the concrete for the basement.
Yes, exactly. And the irony, Barker highlights, is that organizations reward the people who can talk eloquently about abstract theories of safety or productivity, but they completely neglect the individuals who actually understand the messy, ground-level reality of the work.
Which is just wild when you think about it.
It is, because you cannot achieve advanced execution if you haven't secured the fundamental mechanics of the job.
The way Barker describes this corporate trap, it instantly makes me think of a specific type of hobbyist.
Yeah, like what?
Imagine someone who decides, completely out of the blue, that they want to get into competitive cycling.
Okay, I can picture that.
They go out and they drop $10,000 on a top-of-the-line aerodynamic carbon fiber bicycle.
The whole setup.
The whole setup. They purchase the specialized clip-in shoes, the skin-tight aerodynamic gear, the heart rate monitors, the works. They have acquired the most advanced package available.
But let me guess, they don't actually know how to ride it.
Exactly. They haven't actually spent any time learning how to balance on two wheels at a slow speed. They don't know the mechanical feeling of, you know, unclipping their shoes when they approach a sudden stop sign.
That sounds like a disaster waiting to happen.
It is. So they hit the street with this elite strategy and this incredibly advanced hardware. And the moment they encounter a red light, they just tip over entirely into the bushes at 0 miles an hour.
That is such a perfect visual for this. And what's fascinating here is how Barker completely redefines what a fundamental actually is, which explains why that cyclist tips over in the first place.
Right, because we tend to think of fundamentals as just like the easy stuff.
Exactly. In our modern work culture, we've been conditioned to view fundamentals as beginner material. We treat them as the tutorial level in a video game.
Just something to get past.
Right, the basic concepts you're forced to learn on day one, purely so you can graduate to the quote-unquote real work.
But Barker is saying the opposite, isn't he?
He argues the exact opposite. The fundamentals are not temporary training wheels that we outgrow once we acquire a fancy title or gain some experience. They are the permanent core of the job.
So going back to the John Wooden locker room.
Exactly. Those players didn't learn how to put their socks on properly during freshman year and then graduate to just never thinking about their feet again.
Because they still wear socks as seniors.
Exactly. Wooden taught them that a single wrinkle in a sock causes a blister.
Ouch, yeah.
And that blister causes pain, which, you know, subconsciously changes the way the player runs to avoid the pain.
Oh, wow, the ripple effect.
Right. That altered running stride changes their physical mechanics, which ruins their jump shot in the fourth quarter, which loses the national championship.
That is just incredible when you trace it all back.
It's all connected. The fundamentals are the core mechanic of success. Like great coaching. You start with the basics, you repeat them, you sharpen them, and you verify them indefinitely.
You never, at any point in your career, get so advanced that you think the fundamentals no longer apply to you.
Never.
Okay, so knowing that the carbon fiber bicycle is completely useless without the fundamental skill of balance, that brings up an immediate logistical problem.
Okay, what's that?
Well, if we accept that these advanced theoretical slide decks fail when the basics are weak, how do we actually check the integrity of those basics?
That is the million-dollar question.
Right. If a leader wants to know if their foundation is genuinely strong or if it's just this mirage constructed out of buzzwords, Barker gives a remarkably definitive, almost aggressive instruction.
Yes, he does.
He says you have to physically leave the office.
He draws a very hard line on this point. Barker states flatly that EHS, and by extension, you know, really any operational leadership, it cannot be led from behind a desk.
You can't just manage from a spreadsheet.
Exactly. The true value of a professional only manifests in the physical space where the work is actually being executed. You have to confront the very real, often really uncomfortable friction between theoretical planning and ground-level reality.
Because the paper doesn't reflect the messy reality.
Exactly. And Barker introduces a critical diagnostic concept here, which is the necessity of verifying whether the standard on paper is actually the standard in practice.
Because the standard on paper is always flawless.
Oh, always. It was drafted in a climate-controlled conference room by well-rested people drinking good coffee, debating these optimal scenarios.
Right, but wait. If there are highly detailed, meticulously written procedures and standards, and I mean, in fields like environmental health and safety, those standards are often legally mandated and incredibly precise. Why is it so incredibly hard to just follow them?
That is the friction right there.
Why does a standard fail to translate from the paper to the practice? When I think about this disconnect, I imagine using a GPS application on a smartphone.
Oh, I like this.
The written procedure, the standard on paper, is exactly like looking at a perfectly clean blue line on the digital map before you start driving.
Right, it looks so simple.
Yeah, the map tells you to go straight for 2 miles, take a right turn, and arrive at your destination. It's this flawless, frictionless theory.
Until you leave your driveway.
Exactly. The moment you actually get behind the wheel and enter the physical environment, you encounter a sudden road closure. There's aggressive, heavy traffic, a massive truck cuts you off, and there's, you know, blinding glare on your windshield.
The real world happens.
The immense pressure of the field environment totally overrides the theoretical blue line. You're forced to adapt, to make split-second decisions to avoid collisions, and suddenly you're navigating 5 streets away from the original plan.
That GPS analogy perfectly illustrates the concept Barker introduces next, which he calls drift.
Drift, okay.
Yeah. A job drifts when a massive disconnect forms between the written, standardized procedures and what the workers are actually doing out in the field.
And to your point about the traffic and the glare, this drift almost never happens because workers are just maliciously deciding to break the rules or sabotage the company.
Right? How? Hardly ever. It happens because of the conditions and the immense, often completely contradictory pressures people are operating under.
Give me an example of that.
Sure. Imagine a factory worker at the end of a loud, exhausting 14-hour shift. The written procedure dictates they must walk all the way around of a massive conveyor belt to reach a tool station.
Okay. Sounds simple enough on paper.
Right. But the machine they're operating is slightly malfunctioning, and they are under strict orders to meet a daily production quota.
Oh, so the pressure is on.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Walking around the belt takes 3 minutes. Hopping over, it takes 3 seconds.
Wow.
The pressure of the quota forces them to adapt to the reality of the moment. So they hop the belt, they meet the quota, they don't get hurt.
So they just do it again the next day.
Exactly. They drift further and further away from the safety baseline purely to survive the conflicting demands of their environment.
That makes total sense. The pressure of the environment literally reshapes the behavior, regardless of what the paper says.
Yes. And if we connect this to the bigger picture, that environmental pressure is exactly why Barker insists that leaders and EHS professionals must know the policies, procedures, and standards with absolute intimacy.
But not just so they can recite them, right?
Exactly. Not so they can sit in an office, point at a manual, and blindly enforce rules like some dictator. Knowing the standard perfectly acts as a highly tuned diagnostic tool.
Kind of like a baseline.
Yes. Think of a veteran cardiologist who knows exactly what a healthy baseline heartbeat sounds like. They have listened to it thousands of times.
Right, so they know it inside and out.
Exactly. Because they know that foundational standard so intimately, the very second they hear a faint murmur, the second the heartbeat drifts even slightly from the baseline, they immediately spot the anomaly.
Oh, that's a great way to look at it.
If a professional knows the standard perfectly, they can spot weak execution before it becomes normalized. They can recognize a hazard like a worker hopping a conveyor belt before it results in a catastrophic injury.
But they can only utilize that diagnostic tool if they are physically standing on the factory floor, feeling the heat, hearing the noise, and, you know, listening to the heartbeat of the organization.
You can't hear the murmur from the conference room.
Right. You have to be standing in the aggressive traffic to understand why the driver abandoned the blue line on the GPS. You have to learn the physical task, witness the malfunctioning equipment, and just feel the weight of the quota the workers are carrying.
Absolutely.
You have to verify with your own eyes if the foundation is structurally sound, or if it's just a beautiful illusion printed on high gloss paper in a boardroom.
And exploring that friction between the boardroom and the factory floor leads to a really crucial pivot in Barker's framework.
Okay, where does he go next?
Well, once you're standing in the field and your diagnostic tools alert you to this drift, how do you actually correct it?
Right, because you can't just start yelling at people.
Exactly. If a safety manager walks onto a site with a clipboard, sees a worker bypassing a safety guard to meet a quota, and immediately starts shouting about policy violations and writing disciplinary tickets, they aren't fixing the drift.
They're just making people defensive.
Worse than that, they're ensuring that the next time they walk onto the floor, the workers will actively hide the problems from them. The workers will conceal the hazards just to protect their jobs.
Oh, wow. So the manager just becomes the enemy. They transition from a diagnostician to a hall monitor, and all transparency instantly evaporates.
Which is incredibly dangerous.
Yeah.
So the conversation logically must shift then from the act of identifying the problem to the relational mechanics required to actually solve it.
That makes sense.
Barker outlines core guidance for building truly resilient programs, but he doesn't just list abstract concepts. He focuses on the mechanics of how these concepts operate on the ground.
Like what?
For example, he discusses hazard identification and worker participation not as boxes to check on an audit form, but as active, ongoing investigations that require what he calls real communication.
Real communication.
Yes. It's not a memo. It's the act of asking genuinely curious questions, actively listening to the friction the workers are experiencing, and building a deep enough reservoir of trust that people will voluntarily tell you the truth about the dangerous workarounds they're using.
See, here's where it gets really interesting, though, because as I was reading this specific section of Barker's piece, a massive red flag went up for me, and I want to challenge this idea.
Okay, let's hear it.
Barker points to concepts like leadership, worker participation, and specifically building trust and communication as his core guidance.
Right.
But these sound dangerously identical to the high-level executive suite buzzwords like culture and engagement that he explicitly warned us against at the very beginning of the deep dive.
I see where you're going with this.
He mocked the idea of prioritizing culture over fundamentals. So how is telling an organization to build trust any different from telling them to increase engagement?
It is a brilliant pushback, honestly, because on the surface, the vocabulary overlaps almost entirely.
Right. It sounds like the same thing.
But the vital distinction lies not in the words themselves, but in the mechanical application of those concepts.
Okay. Unpack that a bit.
When Barker ruthlessly criticizes buzzwords like culture and engagement, he's criticizing a corporate environment that treats those concepts as abstract, aesthetic goals that can be achieved through, like, a branding campaign or a slick presentation.
Like when a company sends out a company-wide email declaring, "We now have a culture of safety," and they just consider the job done.
Exactly. That is theoretical and hollow. But when Barker discusses trust and communication in the context of correcting drift, he's grounding them entirely in mechanical, physical action.
So it's not just a feeling.
No, not at all. Trust, in this framework, is not a warm, fuzzy, interpersonal goal. Trust is a highly practical, heavily utilized tool.
Interesting.
And it is forged specifically by getting your boots dirty, standing in the chaotic environment, verifying the grueling conditions alongside the workers, and proving through your actions that you genuinely comprehend the pressures forcing them to drift.
Okay, so trust isn't like a motivational poster hanging in the break room. It's an operational mechanism required to extract accurate data from the field.
Yes, it is the ultimate diagnostic tool. You do not build trust by standing on a soapbox and giving an inspirational speech about safety.
Right.
You build trust by walking up to the worker who is bypassing the safety guard, putting the clipboard away, and asking, "Help me understand why we're doing the task this way instead of what the standard operating procedure dictates."
And not an accusatory way.
Exactly. And then you have to actually listen to the uncomfortable answer. The worker might look at you and say, "Because the specialized tool the company provided has been broken for 3 weeks, and if we follow the paper procedure with a broken tool, the task takes 4 extra hours, we miss our shipping quota, and our manager writes us up."
Wow, so you uncover a massive systemic issue just by asking the right way.
Exactly. That exchange is real communication. It is a highly functional mechanic used to uncover the truth about systemic hazards before those hazards result in a catastrophic failure.
Because if the trust doesn't exist, the worker lies, says everything is fine, and the hazard remains armed and ticking.
Exactly right.
So what does this all mean? When we take all of these disparate pieces, John Wooden forcing future millionaires to smooth out the wrinkles in their socks, the cyclist tipping over on a $10,000 carbon fiber bicycle,
the drift between the clean GPS route and the chaotic traffic.
Yes, all of that. And the use of trust as a mechanical wrench rather than a buzzword. What is the practical takeaway for you, our listener? Because the odds are you might not wear a hard hat and you might not manage a factory floor.
The beauty of this is that the takeaways Barker provides translate perfectly to literally any discipline where complex work is being done.
So how do we apply it?
First, you must dedicate time to understanding the messy reality of the actual work, mm-hmm. not just the sanitized written procedure of how the work is supposed to happen.
Right. Get out of the office.
Exactly. Second, you have to sharpen your ability to recognize risks and environmental pressures before the job drifts entirely out of control.
Catch the drift early.
Third, you must know your foundational standards intimately enough to spot weak execution the second it occurs, like that cardiologist listening to the heartbeat.
Right.
Fourth, you have to cultivate enough operational trust that the people executing the work will tell you the ugly truth about the workarounds they're actually using.
The real communication.
And finally, you have to get out of the theoretical space and verify reality in the field. You have to verify continuously whether the standard on paper is surviving as the standard in practice.
It all routes directly back to the integrity of the foundation. If the basics are aggressively maintained, so many of the advanced problems naturally solve themselves.
They really do.
But if the basics are weak, if the socks are wrinkled and the balance is off, it absolutely does not matter how brilliant your strategy looks on a slide deck. The rest of the system is going to start cracking under the pressure of reality, and it's usually only a matter of time before the whole thing just tips over.
Yeah, Barker leaves his readers with a brutally simple yet profound question that every professional should really stop and ask themselves regularly. And that question is, are we still strong on the fundamentals?
It's a great question.
But exploring this topic today, I think we can twist that question slightly and point it directly inward, leaving you with something to consider long after this deep dive concludes.
Oh, I love that. Let's frame it up.
Examine the daily reality of your own work, your own projects, or even your personal life. What is the putting on your socks and shoes equivalent in your current environment?
The thing you might be overlooking.
Exactly. What is that vital foundational step that you have quietly started skipping because you feel like you possess too much experience to bother with it? And far more importantly, is there a catastrophic failure you are actively risking today simply because you felt you were too advanced to double-check a basic assumption?